Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
Robert is being chased, thrown on the run, and it is caught! Touchdown! Keenan Allen, what a great...
My goal is not to break you, my goal is to make you harder to break.
Comes back, number six!
Huge sack by Joey Bosa.
90-yard touchdown! 90-yard touchdown!
Picked off at the 8-yard line by Derwin James.
Sets his speed, takes a shot downfield, has night.
Caught! Touchdown, Chargers!
Grab your lunch boxes and go attack this day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Was not the most ideal of Sundays. Chargers lose 20-10 at the Pittsburgh Steelers. Maybe Monopoly wasn't the ideal choice for board game night, especially in Windy City, hey Al. Can the bye week come any sooner? Injuries galore, four former first-round picks, particularly a fifth, if you include a timely suspension, hitting the team in a significant way, but we're here to talk you all through it and shine a little light on the situation at hand. So welcome to the Thunder Down Under Chargers podcast. Three of us are here, rain, hail or shine. It's Andy with Jack and Al. Can we spin some positive light on all of this by the end of tonight's show?
Oh, it's going to be a bit of an effort, but I think we'll do okay.
We always have fun. Like, the first thing I think of when we have a first loss of the season, losses are okay, right? We're Chargers fans. Like, losing and sadness is normality for us. I'm a veritable Edward Scissorhands hanging out in the corner in the darkness. But just give us a normal loss. As you said, Andy, don't give us a loss with four first-round picks injured and a fifth suspended.
And that's like a loss. Yeah.
That's where people start feeling like, oh, are the wheels already off? Is the season over? I'm going to say no.
On social media, man.
I know. And Jack, no doubt, as the voice of reason, you'll tell us to calm down. But Andy, this is what happens, man. You roll into the Windy City in Pittsburgh.
Okay,
you get swept away. You get swept away by these Steelers who've been there and done that. First time listeners, I do know that the Windy City is actually Chicago. It's a joke from last week's show, never to be repeated. But yes, 2-1. What can you do, mate? What can you do?
You've known that it isn't the Windy City for just under 24 hours. 7 days. Look, what can you do? We're still 2-1. There's still sort of a little bit of shining light. The worst case scenario is we go into bye week, as I said, which can't come sooner. 2-2. And hey, we've seen some funky stuff happen with the Raiders and the Panthers. Our first two opponents and then battling it out last week. Good thing we played Bryce Young and maybe not Andy Dalton. Mm. But it's not all doom and gloom.
No.
It's the bye's timely, I think, really important. And it's sensibility this next coming week against the Chiefs. Lots to get into, though, with where do we want to start with the game, with what's come from the game.
I don't think it was particularly diabolical as everyone was making out if it wasn't for the injuries. So if we'd lost that game and we'd had one, maybe two of these injuries, to have more than that is sort of going down a bit of a hole of despair. And I can see why people might start jumping off ship straight away. I'm definitely not. I thought the first half was wonderful. Actually, upon reflection, I watched it. I was very happy going in, even at halftime. I thought the play calling on both sides of the ball was really, really good. And maybe Alistair will talk about Roman's scheme a little bit later, but I thought Roman played a good first half. Justin Herbert played exceptionally well, probably the best passing that we've seen so far this season, which was wonderful. And Minter's defense did really well against an offense that was humming by sort of nearing the end of that second quarter. And obviously we know what happened in the third and the fourth quarters. So I don't think it's as bad as people put it out to be. I didn't see, when I was watching the coach's film, gaping mistakes and holes. I saw a team that was still trying to find an identity. Yes, the first 2 weeks might have been a little bit of a misnomer, perhaps. There's still a lot of work to do. But yeah, just as the voice of reason, I didn't think it was that bad in terms of what I saw on the field. The injuries, yeah, that really hurts, doesn't it, Alistair?
It hurts a lot. And we can drill into that before we do, I agree with you. I thought the first half was coherent, both sides of the ball. It was tough. We knew we were going to be met with Steelers toughness. First couple of snaps of the game, Slater had a loss to a defensive lineman. Bozeman had a loss to a defensive lineman. Third and long, punting. It was Steelers football, and I thought we came to play. Najee Harris had something like 10 carries for 19 yards in the first half. I thought things started to change from a momentum perspective. Andy will know where I'm going with this, but two-minute drill, end of the first half. Chargers choose to essentially wave the white flag on a third and 10 and call a running play with about 55 seconds left. Unusual call with Justin Herbert as your quarterback. I mean, I can't think of too many NFL teams that would do that. It's kind of a cowardly call. You're up by 3 points, 10-7, third and 10. I think it was at our 37. Try and get the first down where you just run up the middle for 4 yards, punt. Fields got a bit of momentum on the last drive of the half. He managed to move the ball to a long field goal attempt for Boswell, and he took that and ran with it in the second half. So I thought that conservatism was a bit of a momentum changer, but I'll throw back to you very quickly, Jack, and then we'll bring Andy in. But what really kind of caused the game to end, essentially, in the second half was Justin Herbert being injured. Let's start there. Was allowing Justin Herbert to play this game the right call by Jim Harbaugh? And Andy, you can chime in too. It's because everyone will have a different view. But Jim Harbaugh responded to Dan Popper in the press conference by saying, with Warriors, you give them the shot, and that's what I wanted to do. How do you feel about all of that, Jack?
Well, if you go off what happened in the first half, I'd be silly to say it was the correct decision because he played very, very well. Do you take into account when you make that decision to let Herbert play, all of a sudden your starting left tackle goes down, your starting right tackle goes down? You probably don't. So it was very clear to me that after that first series, that first offensive series of the second half, it's like, okay, Justin Herbert needs to just probably head off the field now because he was getting lit up. The Steelers had that momentum. Their defensive line started getting home a little more. It just seemed a lot more frantic. So I think you can't judge Harbaugh and Herbert's decision to play because what happened in the game caused perhaps another injury or for him to be lit up a little bit. So I think it was fine for him to play. This week perhaps is another story, Andy.
Yeah, I'd really rather not see him play this week at all. That would be shocking. I think it's Herbert's call, really. And I think, like you said, Jack, and the way that I hear what Harbaugh is saying is I leave it up to him and he wants to play. So I don't think it was too bad. It did limit the kind of plays available or, you know, the scheme that we kind of could run and open up. Wasn't really able to get out on, you know, run plays under center, wasn't really able to get out on the sort of boot for any of the wide zone stuff, which the team's been running a fair bit of. So did limit a lot of that. Obviously Slater going down, just unable, like Alt as well throughout the game, just unable to match the speed rushing of Hightower and Herbie. God, came in for 8 snaps and had, what, 2 sacks. And TJ Watt, obviously, as well. Yeah. So it was like a combination. And would the game have ended had the injury has not occurred, ended that way? I don't think so. I think it would have been a great day on both fronts. But, yeah, the reality is that there's a couple of, well, at least one big repeat offender. So we've spoken a fair bit about the offense. Let's head over to the defense because we can jut back. But Joey Bosa, hip, looks like a hip flexor, which could be a bit of bad news.
Yeah,
he's different injuries all the time, man. He's had a back. He has a hand. He has a hip. He looks frustrated. He plays so well when he's on the field. I don't know.
I don't think he looks frustrated. I wouldn't call him. Are you saying that he looks frustrated, like he was slamming his helmet on the ground a couple of seasons ago, or are you saying that he's just frustrated that he can't get healthy? Because I thought his attitude's been relatively positive.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, you see he's despondent, or you can see him almost thinking "not again" as he's walking off the sideline, and that comes through in his presses he's putting in the work. He feels fit, but a different part of his body goes awry every time he tries to play the sport, which is not great. Week three every season.
Yeah, I think it was a back injury from week one and then sort of protecting that a little bit when he was limited in snaps against Carolina. He hurt his hip and was dealing with that throughout the week, and now it's become like quite a problematic thing. And they're not as sort of straight cut as like a low level sprain of a ligament. Like the hip flexor is treated a lot like a hamstring. You sort of have to recover and then build back into it. So, you know, that could be a frustrating one for the conversation of over under games played by Bosa. For sure, if we see him miss like sort of four or five, it's a bit of a bummer.
And the other one we've got to think about is obviously jumping back to the offense is Slater hurting his pec this time, and this is it a continuation from his biceps tear? And did he also tear his pec last year? I don't necessarily know, but again, these things are creeping. This old regime, these old habits are just rearing their ugly heads at this time. And and the Joe Alt doesn't seem too bad. It was an MCL sprain, I thought, but yeah. I thought Joel, this was the first game that he got well and truly beaten by TJ Watt. He obviously let up a sack, and he gave away a penalty as well. I mean, that you'd call that on the body of work. I thought it was separate. It was the same place. Play. I thought they were different players, I'm fairly sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. And I thought, you know, against his body of work in the first 2 weeks, this one I would say well and truly beaten. So I was wondering if he was carrying something into the game and it got progressively worse. We probably don't know. That's pure speculation. But the offensive line as a whole was pretty terrible, I thought, as well, which was a bit worrisome.
Yeah. Herbert got sacked five times, which is kind of, that's all the evidence you need. Although his grade under pressure was unusually low. I mean, he was pressured seven times, apparently, according to PFF. His PFF grade under pressure was 28.3, and I think that maybe speaks to that inability to actually move. Once the pressure bears down on him, he's kind of a statue waiting to get hit. So the counterpoint maybe that Daniel Popper would say, he'd argue, look, if Herbert's not going to protect himself, then who else is? Because he's the type of guy who's always going to play. It's the job of a mature organization to say, step in, it's week three, we've got the bye in 2 weeks, just sit it out. I'm kind of on the fence though, because there's always an information gap. I figure that I tend to prefer to kind of put faith in the professional to make their decision, but we don't have the information that the doctors would have and the pain treatment and how they actually manage the injury. But I don't think there'd be anything wrong with Harbaugh saying, look, it's your choice, but I think the better call is probably not to play given what we have coming up. It didn't happen. He got injured, and now it looks like, Jack, we're going to see a steady dose of Taylor Heinicke potentially this week. How do you feel about Taylor Heinicke if he's called into action based on what you saw in limited snaps?
Well, listen, let's give him the benefit of the doubt. And he was essentially tucking and curling for his life because he was going to get his head taken off because the protection just didn't hold up. He made a couple of good throws, I thought. He made one throw that I thought was pretty good, popped it over the defender. I was like, oh, that's not too bad. So I think with a week of training and with a week of first team reps, that'll be an interesting where our scores are going to come from if it is going to be Heinicke at KC. But yeah, no, we'll just wait and see. At least it wasn't Stick, right? So the decision has been made, and that was good to see from an organizational standpoint that we don't go with the veteran Stick. We actually go with a guy that might give us something more than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if that's not reason enough to, you know, shine a big ray of light on this whole show, it's that Easton Stick didn't come into the game and probably won't next week or whenever else he's needed. That's the biggest win we could have had, right?
Yeah.
Look, I think he just, Heinicke looks like he can kind of, when he's not being tormented by holes in the line, he looks like he can run a pro offense, and he could do that at Washington. So. It's not the worst thing in the world. Like, I feel better about the situation knowing that it is an Easton Stick. That's
you could not evaluate that performance. I always say your absolute benchmark for a quarterback is if you're getting pressured on 40% of downs, it's very hard to operate. The snaps he played, he was pressured on 60% of his dropbacks, according to PFF. Like, what are you going to do? You're just getting absolutely smashed. So getting the vibe that the three of us kind of feel like injuries are the only reason why we lost this game, right? Oh, injuries here, otherwise we would have been fine. Let's be a little bit more level-headed. Maybe Andy, or you can take it with some notice, but if putting injuries to one side, was there any way in any part of this game where you thought the Chargers came up short from a coaching or play perspective on either side of the ball? Something where you thought, okay, Steelers outcoached us there, or our players made a bad mistake here?
Not one play in particular, although there were a couple that really got on my gripe. I think we got sort of outcoached or outlasted in the second half on defense. Artie Smith just kind of cooked up a few more things. We were lacking a rotation on the defensive line. I think guys were playing a lot more tired, bit gassed. It was a high velocity, high energy first half performance by the defense. So maybe they just sort of ran out of steam. Nothing that I saw in particular from like a play call thing from Jesse Minter, but I think it was just better coaching on the Steelers offense in the second half for how they opened up Justin Fields and their running game.
I am a little bit concerned about Jesse Minter's ability to generate pressures, because this is now 2 weeks in a row that we're seeing, obviously Bosa went out, but Minter's defense only was able to get 8 pressures out of 68 snaps. Now that's sitting at 12%, whereas the Steelers generated, they're around 24%. That's 2 weeks in a row now, because the Panthers wasn't particularly high for either. So I'm starting to think that maybe whatever's happening on that defensive line is not working. Listen, Fields is a bit of a scat back. He played a very good passing game as well. But Alistair, what are you seeing in that sense? I think the coverage is actually okay. I thought Christian Fulton had another great game. Asante Samuel Jr. missed a really key tackle, that Scotty Miller got for that big gainer. But sort of the back end looks okay. But what's going on up front? I'm not necessarily liking the low percentage of pressures that I'm seeing.
Yeah, I agree completely with you. I think big picture, where we lost this game strategically, we were talking on the last show, Minter clearly saw the same stats. Fields can't throw the ball between the numbers. And it feels like they left that part of the field more open and protected the outsides well. Well, guess what? Fields between the numbers this week, he went 10 out of 14, 144 yards, a touchdown, and a pick. That pick that bounced off Henley was also between the numbers. But if Minter said, if you can beat us there, so be it. Good for you, you win. Fields passed the test, I think. The strategy didn't work. Mm. But in direct response to your question, I don't think it's helping that the Chargers really don't seem to have an interior pass rush. We're not getting anything really from Puna or Tito. I mean, Puna is having his moments, don't get me wrong. But even Fox, who's been a handy pass rusher, they're struggling to affect the quarterback in 2 of their 3 games so far. So smallish sample, but 1 week is a anomaly, 2 weeks is a trend. And let's see, against a team like Kansas City, Jack, who might have one of the best defensive lines in the league, at least on the interior, there's a real risk that this is something that they maybe would look to deal with at the trade deadline. Can we get some interior pass rush from a 3 technique? Or Minter might just have to start blitzing more, because I don't have the figures in front of me, but it doesn't seem from my view of the tape that they're going crazy with blitzes. So maybe they've got to do something like that to address the defensive side of the ball. Andy, can I take it over to the offense to you now? So obviously the Chargers have been very run-centric, run first. Would you believe me if I told you that Justin Herbert is 31st in the league in passing yards in the Chargers offense? Not something you'd expect from an elite quarterback. But that side of the ball, the way it was going against the Steelers, how we're running it, what our skill position players are like, how are you feeling about the offense? How do you think it's going under Greg Roman?
I think it's going pretty well. So far, we've come up against the best defense that we've played against so far this week. So the run game is down, but in those first 2 weeks, like it showed that we had the right guys and a really good system in place. Passing wise, yeah, Justin looked great, even if immobile. He was on track to double his yearly tally so far. Have I been upset with him and his numbers? Not particularly. Like, we've been winning games. No one really succeeded over four quarters against the Steelers, so I don't put it down to G-Row, my man Bill. I'm pretty good. Pretty good with it.
I've got some thoughts. So looking, this is a team in transition. As much as we like to think that all the work in the off season is now come to fruition and the team knows exactly what they're doing, it's not. I'll just throw some numbers at you, Alistair, and you know some of these because I shared them in another chat earlier. But at the moment, we're sitting in terms of offense, we're sitting 26th in pass blocking. This is per PFF, and 13th in run blocking. Last year was a completely different kettle of fish. You know, the Chargers were ranked 13th in pass blocking and 32nd overall in run blocking. So there has been a massive change of identity, not only just on this offensive line, but how the whole offense works and what it looks like and what it feels like. And I know some people will say, oh, it's just blowing out the rust and it'll take two or three games. Perhaps this might take a little bit longer than just two or three games because it's a massive change. I guess Harbaugh would call it the change for the tip of the spear. You know, that mentality starts up front, starts with your center, flows onto your quarterback. I understand Justin Herbert isn't throwing as much, but we have seen more balance. The pass and the run game, I didn't think the run game got going much on Sunday against the Steelers, but it looked better than what it perhaps would have looked last year. Yep. So I'm okay with where the offense is at the moment, because if we look at what Roman was able to do in Baltimore after a number of years there, you wouldn't be surprised that in 2022, his season, when he resigned at the end of it, Baltimore was second in pass blocking and second in run blocking. So that's where he's getting to. I was a bit worried when I looked at that historical number. I'd go, oh, okay, pass blocking is down. It's not particularly strong. Run blocking is very good because that's part of the Roman game style, but clearly he values both. So it's just getting the cattle in there. What say you to those numbers and that whole idea of we're transitioning and it takes more than just three games in a preseason to feel that?
Yeah, I think we'll find by the end of the year that Pittsburgh might be the very best pass rush in the whole NFL, or top three. So I do think when you say pass blocking's 26th or whatever I think you said, we'll find that in a three-game sample, playing Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh does affect those numbers, especially in a game where, as we've said, Slater got injured. He came back in with a guard on, and then the first snap he came back in, it was a sack, because he couldn't move his pec in time, and Alt came out injured. So I still have been happy with the pass blocking through the first 2 weeks, generally speaking. I thought we stopped
Crosby. Can you, though? Are you happy? Because I have a bit of an issue. There are three solid players. That's Johnson, Alt, and Slater. Okay. They're both respectively ranked per PFF, 39th, 31st, and 19th. All solid. But this pairing of Pipkins and Bozeman, man, is not good. Is not good at all. Pipkins had a pass blocking grade of 2.3.
Yeah.
2.3. And Bozeman is ranked 209th and Pipkins is 121st.
Didn't see that from what I watched through today, that Pipkins was a 2.3 out of 100.
That's terrible. That's terrible.
That's not how he played. I mean, even by their metrics, he gave up three pressures from 25 pass reps. How that equates to a 2.3, it's like maybe someone's pressed the wrong figure. It could be 62.3. It's quite possible. But anyway, we digress. The point was that we didn't lose the game up front against the Raiders, who have Max Crosby and Christian Wilkins. They were okay. Last week, we played a team who's got an impotent pass rush. They did okay. This week, not so much. So as you said, it's a work in progress as the season moves and evolves. The two things at the moment about Greg Roman's offense, Andy, that bother me, and I'm interested in if you agree or disagree. So far, two things stand out like a dog's testes. One, there is no deep passing game whatsoever. Now, is that Herbert? Is that scheme? All I'll say is, again, against the Steelers, there were two attempts thrown beyond 20 yards downfield for the entire game. Neither of them was completed. So there is no downfield element happening really at all. And that is a theme with his offenses. Through 3 weeks, we haven't seen it. The other, Running backs in the passing game, boys. Running backs in the passing game. Three games, the running backs have been targeted 8 times for 8 catches, 16 yards, 2 yards per reception. That is unbelievable. This week we only saw one screen pass. It is putting a lot of pressure on your quarterback if you're really not going to use your running backs at all in the passing game. So they're the two things that I'm looking at with Roman, because to me, you're not going to be a top-ranked offense in the league with those two things sticking out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, I completely agree. You could say yes! maybe
I convinced you.
Maybe personnel is a factor for the deep shots in the pass game. Mm. Maybe we'll see that shift when DJ Chark comes back, Josh Palmer's healthy. But yeah, I asked Jack this on the show that the two of us did a couple of weeks ago about how he felt about the running backs in the receiving game. And maybe that is actually a personnel thing. If you're going to continue to play J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards, are they the guys that you can kind of rely on in that area of the game? Sure, after catch, but I don't know. I don't think that's their strengths. So it is a concern. Maybe get Kamani in there. Untap some talent.
I think he'd be good at it. At the moment, Gus Edwards looks like the best thing he's good for is as a lead blocker as a fullback. His best play again on the weekend was that.
That's also a massive shift in mindset for Justin Herbert, though, because he's had 3 years where he's had arguably one of the best receiving backs in the league for him to just dump the ball off to, which means that safety valve, that thing he's so used to being able to see quickly turning right and going, whoop, Eckler in the flat, 10 yards, is just not there. So, if you're Roman, Alistair, do you sit there and go, well, I don't really have that in my scheme, so I'm going to give it to Justin because he's used to it, or to go, well, no, Justin, you've just got to get used to what we're doing. In terms of, there's one part of my question. The other one is I didn't see any lack of deep threats on the field. As Andy noted, whether it's the personnel, we just don't have a Chark there to really be a burner. I still think Roman's concepts are complex enough. I saw enough complexity there. I know you might think it's a little bit vanilla West Coast, but I did like some of the play design. So two-part kind of elongated question there for you.
Yeah, you're going to have to remind me of the first part as I start to answer the question. But I even though I criticized a couple of elements of Roman, it's more just like, can we expand that part of the game? Like you, I've been fairly happy with how he's run things. And I think some of it, as you say, is personnel driven. You can't cause Austin Eckler to apparate from thin air. You can't create an elite X receiver where none exists. So he's got one hand tied behind his back and he's got one quarterback whose kind of leg is tied behind the other. So he's trying to make do with what he's got. And you can't really complain that they're going with a ball control, time of possession style offense, which worked really well through two games and worked pretty well through the first half this week.
The second part to my question was, do you put that into your offense if you don't have a running back that does that? Or are you utilizing Dobbins and Gus the Bus perfectly because they're actually being incredible blitz pickups and they're pass blocking really, really well? What do you do? Do you sacrifice a running back in the pass protection to put him out in the flat, or do you just keep him there to protect your number one asset?
We've got the best offense. We've got a great offense. It's the best offense there's ever been. And I'm not qualified to answer that question right now. I've gone quasi-Harbaugh, quasi-Trump. No, I don't think you square. I don't think you force a square peg in a round hole, right?
No.
So if they're looking for that element, make Kamani Vidal active and see what you've got. But I get it. It has been beautiful to watch how good Dobbins and Edwards both are in pass protection. Probably the best we've seen at the Chargers for the last 8 years. So it does make sense that they're being used in that way. It's just, when the receivers aren't elite, it would be nice if Herbert had something else, because even like the tight ends aren't offering too much in the passing game either. Although, shout out QJ, McConkey continuing to develop as young players. Andy, I've got a fun one for you, man. I'll let you just let rip. What did you think of the officiating on Sunday? Any opinions on that?
there was one play in particular that I thought was absolute dog shit. And as a result, sees Derwin James suspended for a game. Now, I'm not just saying it's because of this hit. I hear that it dates back to a Colts game in 2022 where he like KO'd the wide receiver, concussed himself.
Yeah.
He's had a couple of bad, pretty like rough seasons the last couple. Been a bit hot-headed. But I thought that the face mask, first of all, was just incidental, an accident. But I really don't think that it was like a careless hit on Freiermuth. It was shoulder to chest to start with, and then it was like a second, like a follow on. Might have been like a split second follow on, but I really didn't like that roughing call.
Yeah. I've flip flopped a bit on this because I read what the league's notice said, and the rule he's breaking is it is a foul if a player lowers his head and makes forcible contact with his helmet against his opponent. And the vice president of football ops wrote, "The video shows that you lowered your head and made forcible contact on Freiermuth. You had an unobstructed path and the illegal contact should have been avoided. Your continued disregard for playing rules will not be tolerated." And he does have this habit of kind of flying in with the crown of his helmet where he doesn't have to. And we've seen that he knows how to do it properly, because in this very game, he made 3 or 4 picture perfect tackles within the letter of the law. He went out to seek ex-coach of his George Stewart, who now works in the league over the off-season, to talk with him through what the league is looking for when it's penalising players. And if I don't know if it's that white line fever, but just in that moment, he does find it hard not to lead with the crown. And look, if you keep doing it, they've already fined him. He led the league last year with 4 unnecessary roughness penalties. The year before, he got fined for that hit on Ashton Doolan that you're talking about. At a certain point, they go, you get a 1-week suspension. Jack, the one that, I don't know if you noticed this, but, and you can speak to Derwin too, but the one that annoyed me a bit was the Khalil Mack roughing the passer call on a 3rd and 10.
Okay, so let me just deal with the Derwin James, and I'll give my 2 cents. I think it's fair enough if he's going to be suspended. It's historical. We know the stance the league is taking on concussions and CTE. However, I am fully going to be ready for when Tua takes the field in 3 weeks' time and be like, he's absolutely fine. It's this silly governance thing where it's like, oh, you know what? We'll fine a safety we'll suspend a safety because they don't really change the game too much. But when it comes to a quarterback who sells tickets and, you know, they're the big ticket item. Everyone wants to come and play. It essentially runs through them. Don't worry about it. It'll be fine. So if this is going to be how the NFL deal with historical players who are too rough, absolutely fine. I think I'm all for protecting the head. I know some people call me soft and all that kind of stuff. Absolutely fine. You can criticize me for that. The effects of CTE are damaging and very, very terrible. That's my 2 cents. And bad luck, Derwin. Maybe you'll change your mindset again, which we've been calling out for anyway. On that, I thought the Chargers tackling has improved exponentially from last year. Second question, the roughing the passer. I don't know. I saw Brock Purdy be poleaxed into the ground, and then I see Mahomes get hit and then go, oh, and then fall over, and then a flag comes out for Mahomes. Nothing comes out for Brock Purdy. What the fuck are you doing, officiating crews? What are you doing? Get your head out of your asses and just, I don't care how you call it. If Mahomes is going to get tapped on the shoulder and he's going to fall over and that's 15 yards, pay it for everybody. I cannot stand it. It's the most. And also, he got pushed into him. Yeah. You've got to understand physics. These are huge men on the line, man. Like, come on. Far out. Anyway.
The Steelers player pushed him into the quarterback.
Hey,
Romo and Nance didn't say anything, Andy. We're just watching and we're like, he's pushed Mac using his momentum into the quarterback. That is not roughing.
Romo did say something. He said, "Yeah, oh, Khalil, come on, buddy. You can't be putting your hand on the quarterback's head like that."
Oh, Jim.
Yeah. Oh, that was terrible.
Shattered. I missed that one. Yeah, look. Well, are we going to get any better officiating this coming week? Not to look forward to that. Golly. Anything further, gents? How are we feeling about punter J.K. Scott?
Oh,
Al, you had some choice words.
Yeah, I thought he was okay, but Alistair?
Better this week, average 50 yards per punt.
Yeah, apparently. I thought he was all right.
Inconsistent, though. I mean, that they brought a rocket in. They brought someone in, I forget his name, but to practice. So that's good. That's what you want from Hortiz. Bring guys in, put a better pressure on the people in the driver's seat. Let's go, JK. All right,
Alistair, what have we got this week? I was just going to go before. What's this Matlock experience? What's going on? He's in motion. He's lining up as a tight end. He's lining up as a fullback. This, I actually don't mind it because Roman's running some. Geez, it was almost like a 13 personnel look, which is pretty incredible. He's all over the place. I'm not particularly liking it. I don't think he's really coming on as much as I'd hoped. But
I'll give you the answer that Greg Roman gave at his press conference. Where do you see Scott Matlock at the moment? And he said about 25%. But his 25% is 80% for a normal person. That's how much potential this guy is. He's only 25% of where he's going to be, and he's already at 80% for most. That's not really what I'm seeing on the coach's film. I'm seeing a guy who at certain times looks like his helmet might be covered, like sticky taped shut. Yeah, or on backwards. But look, the poor guy's spending more times in his meetings during the week. It's like he's doing three people's jobs. He'd be sitting in offense, in defense, on special teams, playing about 80 snaps a week. So the big man is moving too.
He's moving up and down the line. He's in motion. Herbert's like, come on, come on, move. And he's like, I don't know what I'm doing. It's very funny. Anyway.
Hey, get Matlock and JK or Kamani in personnel and just teach Matlock how to block. And then, you know, you're sort of disguising your look and being able to use the running back in the flat. That's just a good one. 25% is eight. Yeah.
Just don't target him.
Gosh, I think we'll get into the rotations of the O-line when we look forward to next week's game. But Al, let's do a couple of little, let's play a bit of snake and ladders. You want to go, Cust?
I will. I've got the ladder this week. So up the ladder. Who's going up the ladder based on their performance? I want to give double ladders out this week because I want two people to be shouted out, even though we lost. Dayon Henley continues to improve. Played every snap, 9 tackles, 3 assists, targeted 9 times in coverage, allowing 39 yards. But just seeing him build on each performance and grow in confidence before our very eyes. So good job, Dayon. But the one I want to shout out, Jack, you mentioned him. I almost did it last week, but it's time to give him his proper flowers, which is Christian Fulton. The dude is ballin'. Would you believe that through 3 weeks, he's PFF's number 3 ranked cornerback in the NFL out of 106 with an 81.4 grade? So it's very early days, but so far that approach of give a contract to a guy in a prove-it year on a prove-it deal, it's working. He looks comfortable. He's decisive. He's tackling well. He's breaking up passes. So Christian Fulton, you're both up the ladder. You're up. And Andy, who's going down the snake? Who's ever climbed a ladder and made that noise? Nobody.
I thought you were getting
Mario, maybe.
Maybe Mario.
Maybe Mario. Yeah.
I thought you were getting me a wah, 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 down the snake. For me,
that's Bradley the noise Bozeman. I'd give to anyone's been down your snake, mate. All right.
Bradley Bozeman. 3 pretty telling weeks with how you've been letting down the other guys in the offensive line. They keep you at center, so you just get one-on-ones. Not us too much. But you snap that football with the physical prowess of a turtle flicking sand on their eggs. With the injuries and the reshuffling of the positions on this offensive line, you need to step up, brother. The big C on your jersey, it's time to lead with your brain and your head and your mind. Let's go.
Yep.
Bozeman.
Over to you, Teach.
There you go. All right. This week's teachable moment is titled Change. Handling change in leadership is crucial, and with Harbaugh, Roman, Minter, and Hortiz, the Chargers have undoubtedly shifted gears. Harbaugh's influence in reshaping this team's attitude has been impressive, but let's not forget, a leopard does not change its spots overnight. While the team's social media lights up with promises of a physical Chargers identity, we're not there yet. The wins early in the year were promising, but this game is a bit of a come-back-to-earth moment against the Steelers. Just look at Roman's scheme and play calling. We've talked about it. It's right on track, but there's a lack of execution, and that's clear across the board. Minter's defense is evolving, but only 8 pressures on fields out of a 68 snaps is worrying. The Steelers set the physical benchmark on defense each year, and the Bolts are still playing catch-up, clearly. We saw and are seeing solid performances from certain positional groups and some flashes from the younger talent in the building, which is always positive. However, our old foe, the injury bug, kicked our ass. This was especially clear losing 2 starting tackles, exposing some old weaknesses. Herbert being spooked and eventually injured. Offensive line flailing. Defense tiring. Key missed tackles. Time of possession lacking. Backup quarterback struggling. It all is a nightmare that we didn't really relive too much. But it's there. All that being said, Harbaugh is steering the ship in the right direction. I believe that. But we're still a way off from becoming that physical and punishing team that he and other leaders envision. It's important to remember that real change takes time. And whilst the early wins were encouraging, this game, and perhaps the upcoming game against KC, reminds us that the remnants of the past don't just disappear overnight. A DIY haircut might seem fine until people start asking if you got into a fight with a lawnmower. A convenience store hot dog might seem edible until your stomach reminds you that it's not indestructible. A late night curry might be a delicious way to end a tipsy night until you realize starting the day cleaning a fecal Jackson Pollock toilet bowl is a terrible trade-off. The Chargers look good 2 weeks in a row, but now reality has slapped us in the face. That's okay. That's growing pains. Sleep with one eye open, gripping your Herbert tight for the time being. Class dismissed.
There will come a show, Andy, where the entire episode is the teachable moment. They're just getting marginally longer and more prolix and a title. And soon we'll just go for a walk, Andy. I'll meet you down at the park and we'll come back when the teachable moment ends.
It really went from 0 to 1,000 with the humorous little metaphors in there.
Gotta keep you on your toes.
The Jackson Pollock.
Well, if they haven't tickled you, how about a shit joke? Golly. All right, week 4, Kansas City Chiefs. They move to 3-0 following a 22-17 victory over the Falcons. I mean, even when they don't look that great, they still get it done, right? They find a way. We sort of, you never cheer for injuries, but seeing Isaiah Pacheco go down for 6 weeks, Clyde Edwards-Helaire still being on IR. They bring in Chase Battle. Is that his name? The halfback who just...
Carson Steele.
Yeah. Chase Battle. Oh, that's good. Carson Steele. And he just managed to motor his way through. Signed Kareem Hunt to the active roster off the practice squad as well. So, look, we've really just got to worry about the passing game and Pat Mahomes, don't we? Over the run game. But look, it's just Chargers versus the Chiefs and the refs. And there's just been moments across the league. My first reaction with the Derwin James suspension was they're just doing it like they're just not even trying to be subtle anymore. Just suspending players before we even have to throw the flag. Making their own job easier. Oh, that's my little gripe. We'll see. We'll see if any of that comes into fruition. But obviously we spoke about the injuries with the team, and I think it's a good opportunity to talk about how the offensive line's going to be reshuffled heading into this matchup, because we saw Trey Pipkins swing across to left tackle. Alt left on the second last snap of the game. So Foster Sorrell will go to right tackle, you'd say. And then Leatherwood could very well be activated to the active roster as a backup tackle. And it's all pretty grim. I think one benefit for Heinicke being the quarterback is he's probably played with most of the guys on the offensive line in second team reps at training. So maybe it's not all bad. Give us your opening headline for the week 4 bout, Jack.
Middling Mahomes barely breaks a sweat as Reed swallows a Harbour burger. That is my headline. I don't think the Chiefs will try too hard. I think they will beat us quite soundly. Hopefully it's within two scores. But yeah, I don't think this will end this game 2-2.
It's gone straight to the prediction. I think
my headline was kind of that.
Teams coached by Harbour don't mind their backs against the wall. I have no doubt he'll come up with some ludicrous World War II inspired metaphor. We would say the Rats of Tobruk in Australia. He'll probably call up images of Pearl Harbour, the Pacific, D-Day, who knows. But whoever plays for Jim Harbour will come out strong and putting everything on the line. And I want to give a headline that kind of taps into some positivity. And that is Kelce still Kelce? Because it's been noticeable that through three games, he's just had the 8 catches for 69 yards. His PFF grade of 60.7. It's the lowest of any point of his career. He's been elite. He's been a Hall of Famer. Now, Jack's look tells me, he thinks, you know, Kelce's been around the bush. He knows that I just need to step up when it matters and it's not playoffs and I've still got it. But he hasn't played well, Jack. He has not played well, Jack. But will it matter with Derwin James out? Arguably not.
Now you've said it. Kelce's going to have a good game, aren't you? Because my headline for Kelce with Kelce comeback game haunts Harbour. So, Andy, take it away.
No Derwin James means Kelce's going to flourish. That's just the way that the Chargers bouts go. They know how to... Mahomes just knows how to get Kelce in the game. I've got an optimistic one before I go to any kind of serious one. Nasty bout of gastro spreads through the Chiefs locker room, giving an undermanned Chargers outfit a fighting chance.
I wouldn't mind it.
Yeah. I wouldn't hate it.
Well, Rushy Rice finally gets his comeuppance and is suspended by the league for two or three weeks for the driving incident. That would be nice. Actual things that matter and put people's lives at risk rather than a random tackle on a football field. That would be good. I'm not sour at all. So there are our headlines. Why don't you start us, Jack, with a bit of pass the parcel, keys to victory. Start us off, mate.
I really don't know where the scores are going to come from if Justin Herbert is not playing. So I know that sounds negative, and I have been negative in this instance, but maybe it's time for Roman to get a little freaky in the sheets. Maybe just a little bit of a hall pass to do some really weird stuff and do some interesting things that the Chiefs aren't ready for and maybe shock them. Will that shock last for four quarters to a win? I'm not too sure. But hey, he's off the leash, baby, and Roman likes to play in that RV. Crack some cans and crack some whips. Oh, who knows?
I like it. I'll build on it, man, because the Chiefs' outside corners are both seventh-round picks. Nazee Johnson and Jalen Watson, both seventh-round picks from 2022 because Trent McDuffie's moved inside. So why not cast it loose? Just throw it, attack deep. Use Darius Davis more than 8 snaps a game. Get him involved, perhaps. Run some outside zone, Andy. Do something creative on offense. Nothing to lose.
Yeah. And on defense, for me, step up in coverage. Run defense from the linebackers has been great so far, but going to need Deion Henley just to get his sort of wherewithal in the middle of the field on coverage because, yeah. Kelce will feed.
Mm-hmm. And Rashee Rice.
Dare I say it, one of my other keys as we pass the parcel along is that, hey, let's force Mahomes into some big time throws because he's not pushing the ball down the field at all. So, you know, I know I've got to be very careful what I wish for here because we could end up having Mahomes 380 yards, 5 touchdowns. But yeah, let's make Mahomes uncomfortable and force him out wide and deep. And hopefully Gilman and who's our boy who'll be playing strong safety?
Molden,
yeah. Let's get Molden involved. And Fulton maybe have a feast. And Asante does love a pick as well. So yeah, make Mahomes uncomfortable.
Yeah, just to build on that. He's thrown interceptions every week so far. So let's win the turnover battle. All right. Have you got a score prediction, Jack?
Yeah, I said we're losing this game. 24-10.
Yes, I'm going to be watching this game with Jack, travelling to go see him in his home state, now home state of Tasmania.
The Apple Isle.
I don't think we're gonna enjoy each other's company more than what we're watching, Jack. Chiefs 24, yep. Chargers 13. We now haven't beaten KC in a home game for us since 2013. We're still the San Diego Chargers. So I can't see it happening with all the injuries, Andy.
Yeah, I don't see it happening either. I've got 27-13 to the Chiefs.
Oof.
I just think it's going to grind out and sort of fade away a little bit again, like it did this week. Rightio. Let's go around the NFL for a headline each, fellas, just for something a little bit different. Get away from the Chargers. We'll start incorporating this into the show a little bit more and more when we decide that we want to run over time a bit. So
going weeks where we lose, basically.
Yeah.
Let's talk about something else.
Yeah, and over to something fun. Jack, what do you got?
So I just think of the first day of high school when you're in year seven for us in Australia.
and you look like you were 35. Yeah, play on.
But you're this kid that perhaps might have left all his good friends at primary school, and you're moving to high school and you're standing in the yard for the first time. You're going, I wonder if anyone's going to be as good a friend as as my best friend in year six. And this is Justin Jefferson. He's sitting there going, I've lost my quarterback. I haven't had him for a long time in Kirk Cousins. I'm arguably the best young receiver in the game, and possibly could be the best receiver ever with my numbers. And I'm going, what am I doing? And then all of a sudden this person starts walking towards you and you go, they look a bit geeky. They've got some glasses on. They're a little bit, what's going on here? I'm not too sure. But then you get talking and everything's all right. Because if you told me that Justin Jefferson would be averaging 90 plus yards a game, have 3 touchdowns on 14 receptions with Sam Darnold slinging it in the shoulder, I'd tell you, you're a liar, sir. You are a liar. Nice job, Minnesota. Good to see Justin Jefferson with a quarterback that can sling it. And good on Sam Darnold. Perhaps finally he's found a home. Well done.
Nice, Jack. I think it's sustainable too. I always get wary because Darnold did this for 3 starts at Carolina and then it all fell away. But it does not look like this Vikings ride is slowing down anytime soon. Good coaching. And good coaching is where I'm going, Jack. I love seeing good coaching in the NFL. And there's no better test of a coach's goodness than when their starting quarterback goes down. Can the offensive coordinator work around that and do something great? And Matt LaFleur, shout out to Packers Dan, what you're doing with Malik Willis right now, it's not only buying Jordan Love more time to recover because they're not going to feel like they need to force him back in when they're up, got a 2-1 win-loss record, but you're showing that you're adaptable, flexible, creative, know how to fit your scheme to your players' strengths. Malik Willis looked like a dunce in Tennessee. Right now he's playing like a league average starter, using different concepts, running a completely different style of offense. That's the sort of stuff I would love to see Greg Roman do with the Taylor Heineke, or dare I say with an Eastern stick. Show us that you are like LaFleur, because I think LaFleur is now firmly in the top 10 play callers in the NFL, and I think he's got a valid claim to a top 5 play call in the NFL. So well done, Matt LaFleur. That's my headline.
Definitely keeping the loveless Packers afloat and relevant. Doing good things there. Jack, I kind of was keen. I was teetering on wanting just to throw the house at Sam Darnold, and I'm just enjoying how surprised I am to see the Vikings atop the NFC North with Caleb Williams, Detroit. I mean, obviously, yeah, Packers have lost Love, but it's even, and it's a pretty fun division. When it's just gone on its head. But I will say that Proffy's pick for MVP, Josh Allen, is certainly making a very good case to start the season. Is this the year that the Bills can topple the Chiefs in the AFC? There's a long way to go, but man, they looked good. Put 47, a 47 burger, as they say, up on the Jags just yesterday, and for a receiver room that's relatively no named, man, Josh Allen's just putting it on his back and he's getting it done. Who, Stephon Diggs, who? Love it. Bills.
How's that Aiden Hutchinson Defensive Player of the Year pick looking? What, 6.5 sacks in 3 games?
Play like a heavy freak.
Heavy start. All right, fellas. Well, that might wrap it up. We've got the Chiefs coming up. Let's hope that we've all got the day off after that show, because I think we're going to have to get pretty drunk. but look, thanks for listening, everyone. And as always, bolt up. We'll see you next time on Thunder Down Under Chargers podcast.
Ta-ta.
Firing, he's got Floyd turning, got it, 6 and 10, 5, high step, touchdown, San Diego!
Good night to all!